Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it's Friday, and we're bringing you some more rock and roll. All right, this Saturday night, November 20th in New Jersey, I'm going to be at the Striper to Hell with the Devil 30th anniversary show at the Stone Pony in New Jersey. If you're in Jersey, the New York area, come hang out and check out the show. Striper's doing their classic album in its entirety in their vintage black and yellow stage costumes. I'm going with my Heavens Metal group text of Howard Jones from The Devil You Know, Richard Christie from Howard Stern. We're going to go check it out. We're going to do a Christian metal podcast, and in honor of the 30th anniversary of To Hell with the Devil, Michael Sweet's been here a couple of times, but I got Striper guitarist Oz Fox. He's sharing stories about the making of To Hell with the Devil, what the album did for the band as far as popularity, what it was like to deal with sudden mainstream fame. He's also talking about the band's breakup in 1993 when he took over as the lead singer, what brought them back together. You hear the story behind his name, Oz Fox, his Ozzy Osbourne imitation, how some of his personal guitar heroes shaped his own playing and sound. Plus, we'll get into a little bit of a religious discussion, a little bit of end of the world type stuff. Great rock and roll stories coming up with Oz Fox of Striper. It's To Hell with the Devil 30th anniversary. But first, had a whirlwind tour in Europe with the WWE this whole week. I'll tell you one thing. I'm in Vienna right now. I go home in a couple days, and I'm looking forward to getting home and sleeping in my own bed. And this is not just because of my comfy mattress. It takes more than just a comfy mattress to get a good night's sleep. You know what you need? You need some comfy sheets as well. And you know what kind of sheets I'm sleeping in? The same ones that three U.S. presidents sleep on. Wonder if Trump is sleeping on them. Boll & Branch. Everything Boll & Branch makes, from bedding to blankies, is made from pure 100% organic cotton, which means it's super soft. And I know what you're thinking. Sheets are like really expensive, right? But not if you buy Boll & Branch, okay? Since you've been getting directly from Boll & Branch, you're pretty much paying a wholesale price. So instead of shelling out $1,000 in the store, you can treat yourself to these luxurious, soft, comfortable sheets for just a couple hundred bucks. Come on. Did you really think I'd pay $1,000 for sheets? I'm cheap. Come on, man. Everyone loves these Boll & Branch sheets as well. They got thousands of five-star reviews. If you're still not convinced, try this. Boll & Branch will let you try the sheets for 30 nights. And if you don't love them like I do, love them like I do, and experience the best night's sleep of your life, send them back for a full refund. All right? They'll even ship the sheets to you for free. So free shipping, money-back guarantee. Does not get any better than that, or does it? All right, I'm going to sweeten the deal. If you go to bowlandbranch.com right now and use my promo code Jericho, you're going to get $50 off your first set of sheets. That's my promo code Jericho at bowlandbranch.com. You're going to get $50 off your first set of sheets. Bowlandbranch.com, promo code Jericho. Sleep in the most comfortable, soft, and restful sheets you've ever had. Boll & Branch, check them out. All right, so we're here in Las Vegas with Sir Oz Fox.
Yo.
Matt, we've known each other for a long time, dude.
It's been a while,
You know what I mean? But it's cool because you live here in Vegas now.
Yes.
Where do you rehearse in Vegas? What's it like living in Vegas, for one?
Vegas is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to live in Southern California.
Uh-huh.
That's where I was born and raised.
Yeah.
And when I met my wife, she lived here.
Okay.
And I was in a band just playing really terrible places in town, playing covers. And
this is in between Striper tours or something?
Yes.
Or, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. This was probably the end of 2008, mm-hmm. Going into 2009. And so it was really great to be in this classic rock band here in town with, of all people, the lead singer from Angel, Frank Demino.
Oh.
Says he lives here.
Okay.
So for me, that was pretty exciting just to be in the same room with the guy, let alone playing covers.
Were you an Angel fan?
You know, I remember Angel, but I wasn't following mm-hmm. them. That was around the time when I was like more into Van Halen and stuff
right.
like that. But now that I've been playing with Frank, I am a fan now.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because they were like, I just read this book about Casablanca Records.
Yeah.
And they were kind of the antithesis to Kiss. Like, Neil Bogart signed them because Kiss was like the dark makeup and all the craziness, and Angel was supposed to be like all dressed in white and
yes.
coming out in a spaceship, and it just didn't catch on,
right?
You know,
right.
like they expected it to.
Well, you know, I'm sure Frank will have a different version of that.
I'm sure, right? I'm sure, but that's what you know. That's
but,
what they're
but
saying.
That's what they'll say.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess.
So you're playing in the band with him.
Yeah, and that was great. But I was dating Annie during mm-hmm. the time I was playing with Frank, and then when we decided to finally get married, I was thinking, my gosh, this is a great town. I've been here a lot, and the entertainment's amazing here.
Mm-hmm.
The food was just incredible. And I thought to myself, this would be a great place to live. Why not just stay here? So yeah. I made the move from Southern California here because of Annie.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never regretted it.
You mentioned that you were basically off last year from Striper. How is that when you get back in the rehearsal room after not playing for a while?
You know, it's like riding a bike, you know, because we already know half the stuff anyway. I'm really looking forward to playing the new album, which
right. It's fun. A great new record, Fallen.
Thank you.
Is the record. Actually, the last two Striper records, Revelation and Fallen, have both been like, I told Mike, some of the, especially Revelation and this one, some of the best stuff you've ever done, not just in the last couple of years, like of the whole Striper catalog. Mm. I think both those records are very standout.
Yeah. Yeah. No More Hell to Pay was definitely the.
I'm sorry, I said Revelation, No More Hell to Pay.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
It definitely was a huge. I would say it was definitely a landmark thing for us to do that album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a great vibe. Everything was cool about it. Kind of almost, a lot of people compared it to Hell with the Devil.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the quality of the songs same and vibe. The production.
Even the cover.
Yeah, same, exactly.
Similar thing, yeah.
But then coming out with Fallen was even taking it a step further mm-hmm. from that. And it's that, I'm really, really pleased with that. And especially Michael getting together with, you know, Clint from,
mm-hmm, Seven from Seven Dust. Yeah, Clint Lowry.
And that song just really has a certain kind of
Yahweh
hair stand on edge vibe to it. And I love it. It's great. So,
I always like kind of like those heavier Striper songs. Like you guys always had that real heavy side to you, which was always my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, there's great. Been like a resurgence, I think, for Striper over the last few years due to those records. Or, I mean, how do you feel?
I honestly couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
I'm just really happy.
But there is a resurgence for the band, though.
It's yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There definitely has been a big resurgence. And, you know, Michael's worked really hard to, you know, pull it together. And mm-hmm. Lisa as well, his wife.
His wife, yeah.
Been managing. She just has done an amazing job.
Oh, she manages you guys now?
She's been working with managing us, yes.
Gotcha.
And, so that's been a big plus. I mean, mm-hmm. they've done such a great job at doing that, and we're just kind of riding.
Well, I mean, you're talking
train.
About 30 plus years of Striper with the original lineup.
Yes,
which blows my mind because that's pretty rare for any band to have an original lineup. You know,
well, there've been a few near death experiences, but we're still here.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Which is great.
Now, let me ask you this: as far as you know, you guys were such an anomaly back in the 80s with being, you know, the first real Christian metal band, or the biggest, let's say, and kind of taken the task for it in a lot of ways back in that time frame, especially. Mm. Now, it's just the way it is, and no one really even cares as much as they used to. It's like, oh, my God, it's a Christian metal band. Now it's like it's Striper.
Yeah, and Striper, I think, has really worked hard for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have gone a number of ways, but I'm very thankful that, you know, we've had, I believe, divine intervention taking care of whatever we needed in that area. Mm. Even if people didn't like us, we still had some kind of divine, I should say a huge kind of divine power pushing us along.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I believe, to be honest with you. You can do all you want to make something happen, but if you don't have divine favor, I don't know that you'll get what you really should be getting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my opinion, of course. And that's nothing bad about anyone who works really hard and gets something done, and they did it. Okay, but I really believe having, if I can say it, having God be behind you, why wouldn't I want the creator of the universe,
mm-hmm.
who knows all and created all, be the person behind what I'm doing? And that's
did you feel this always since you joined Striper, kind of this divine hand on your shoulder? I mean, you would think as a Christian band standing up the way that you do, that you would always have had that, but did you really feel it?
Well, it when I was small and didn't really know much about religion,
mm-hmm.
I should say, I went to a Catholic church with my grandmother, you know, was confirmed in the Catholic church, all that stuff. I really still didn't really understand what all that meant. I just knew that there were these churches that prayed to a God, that, you know, there was Jesus on a cross, and what did that mean, and all that. But as time went on, obviously, my mother, bless her heart, she did everything she could to be the best single mom she could. And she started going to church. She started going to a Pentecostal type of church. It was more of a hippie Pentecostal church, because I remember all the guys having long hair and wearing, you know, funky shirts and stuff. But that was where I really was introduced to the whole idea of being a born-again Christian. And that was the first time I opened up a Bible and started reading the stories that went along with that. And when you read some of the stories, obviously some people might say, oh, you know, it's all fairy tales. But then, you know, there's proof that stuff happened. There's actual physical proof of it. And so after you read those stories, and then you start to say, wow, these people really had God loving them and guiding them and doing miracles in front of their eyes, winning their battles, you know, bringing fire down from the sky out of nowhere. Incredible things like that happening. Then when Jesus obviously came and started healing people and talking about what love was really supposed to be about, it took it to a new level. And so learning all of this stuff, going to my mom's church, just kind of really changed my whole perspective about it. But of course, there's always that element of, well, you know, I'm still living the world, and I'm, you know, I got to do my thing, and, you know, and I got to impress people or do whatever I have to do to be a great guitar player or whatever you do. So you kind of get this half-hearted thing going, where half of you is believing in that, but the other half is, I got to be this.
Right.
Okay. And what happens is people miss the idea of surrendering everything to God. And when you get that, is when you really start getting faith, because once you take that step to surrender everything, then God will start doing everything for you. And that's really what started happening in my life. And I started moving ahead with faith that just didn't worry about anything anymore. I didn't worry about whether the band was selling albums or not, or if I was gigging all the time or not. I just trusted that God was going to take care of it, and somehow he always does.
Yeah, he, as long as you let him drive, he'll take you where you got to go.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't like it, but...
And I'm not trying to preach or anything.
No, no, no.
I'm just telling you from my own experience, that's what's happened in my life. So for me, that's really all what it's all about. And then to be able to share that with people through the music I play is even cooler, you know. And to get to a point now where 30 years later, Stryper's very famous in a lot of circles, the door's open to me in a lot of places, especially here in Vegas. Everybody opens their doors. And I'm meeting a lot of guys here that don't know anything about Christianity but start asking questions. Or they know a little bit, but they're skeptical, but they come up and they ask, well, why is it this and why is it that? And how come you say this? And I have the opportunity to share and talk to them about it. Or there's guys that just today, I had a guy that's a local musician, and he's pretty well known here in town. And he showed up at church. He texts me and says, what church you go to? I think I'm going to come today. You know, am I the guy that is going to trigger that for people here in town? I don't know. But I'm glad I was here to be able to tell him what church I went to and be there when he showed up.
See, but you just never know. I might have told you this before. I know I've told Michael before. But for me, as a 14-year-old kid, when Soldiers Under Command came out, and you see this group of guys, and you guys look cool hair, cool costumes. You know, at the time, Christians weren't supposed to look like that.
Right.
You mentioned though there was the hippie church where the guys had long hair. You guys had this long hair, and it almost like, so if you want to be a Christian, you can still look like that.
Yeah.
That was cool to me, even though I could never grow my hair that way or like look half as cool as you guys at 14. But it still showed me like, wow, like there, you can still do this and be cool and be Christian at the same time.
Well, yeah, and you know, that's a great thing. That's a great factor in the whole thing. And that definitely was part of a plan for us to do that and bring a message to people. And it wouldn't have worked if it wasn't meant to be. And that's why I feel it's important for us to grasp a hold of that whole concept and that idea that you surrender everything to God and he takes you places.
Right.
That's what we believed in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
If we surrendered what we did and just continued to be who we were, we're going to reach a certain amount of people that will accept us. And and really grasp. You would believe, it's amazing to see how many people really just latched on to what we were. And man, we were their band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was
a lot of people that I talk to every day.
Yeah.
Oh, Stryper, I love Stryper. I love Stryper. A guy called Howard Jones used to sing with Killswitch Engage.
Uh-huh.
He now sings in a band called Devil You Know. We had a half an hour discussion about Stryper on this show.
Yeah.
You just never know who it was that you guys connected with.
Mm. Absolutely.
You know?
And yeah. You know, and there's another thing too. I mean, somebody just brought this up to me. They said, you know, there were all these different Christian bands that were coming out and saying, well, this band is the alternative to Rat.
Yeah.
Or this band
White
is
Cross.
The alternative to whatever, you know.
Baron Cross is Iron Maiden.
But but Stryper, what I was told was Stryper didn't sound like anybody.
No. Sound like you.
Yeah.
You know, the tone of your guitars and everything, you always could tell a Stryper song.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? And the leads and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so to me, that was definitely a blessing, and it meant to be.
Do you think, like, if you're talking about the great guitar players of that era, and you mentioned, you know, your George Lynch or your DeMartinis or Van Halen, a lot of times Stryper does not get mentioned in there. Do you think it's because of the Christian element?
I would say, in some sense, yes.
You know, stereotyping you.
There definitely is a stereotype in the rock world
or
about
prejudice. Maybe is a better word.
Yeah, you can say that. Mm-hmm. I mean, and to me, I mean, you can say all you want about, you know, whether Stryper's a Christian band or not, but in my opinion, that's part of being a Christian. You're going to get shunned, you know, and because of that, you're blessed. And I honestly believe in that. I honestly believe that the Bible says, even though people persecute you or come against you or shun you, you know, it doesn't matter. What matters is that we stand up for what we believe
what you believe in.
Yeah,
right.
And which is, you know, believe that Christ died and rose again, and now he is, because knowing him and believing in him, you will be in eternity with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's my belief, you know. I can't force that on anybody. But all I can do is show in my life that God's blessed me and showed me that he's with me and he's giving me favor. And he's doing that for the band. So there you go.
Who were your favorite guitar players when you were starting out?
Oh, geez. I gotta go back. Let's see. Let me get all the moths out of my head. You know, early on, when I actually first started playing guitar, there was an album that my mom played all the time. That really sparked my interest in guitar was an album by Buck Owens called Open Up Your Heart. And at that time, the guy that that was the session player on it, playing guitar, was James Burton. And he did this chicken picking type of almost rock style of playing that just really sparked my interest. And it made me want to play guitar. And I was about 6 years old at the time.
Oh, wow, okay.
You know, so it was a long time ago. Well, obviously, I learned how to play guitar eventually, and then I moved from that. And because my dad was a huge jazz fan, but he also liked Latin music, the only rock music my dad listened to was Santana. So I latched on to Santana and really just got into his playing and his style and what he was doing, his tone, and that pretty much set a pace for me as where I was going to go with, you know, my guitar playing.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got older, obviously it switched into guys like Michael Schenker, and really loved Tony Iommi because I got into that whole Black Sabbath metal sound.
Yeah.
You know, so I was really big on that. Eventually, it led to me listening to guys like Jeff Beck and listening to. I really got into Yesterday and Today, which is YNT now. Got into them. Dave McKetty.
Great player. Oh, that's an underrated guy, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Dave's a great guy, too.
Yeah.
Is
it cool when you get to meet these guys?
Oh, my God. They were just here. And I got to go back and say hi to them, you know?
Yeah.
It was just amazing. But then. Eventually got into the guys like I started actually taking lessons from a friend of mine, a very popular Christian rock band called Guardian. They had a guitar player named Tony Palacios.
Yeah,
I ended up taking some. He saw a little bit of a dilemma in me during the In God We Trust period, where I was really just down on my plan, and he sat down with me and started teaching me theory.
Really?
Yeah.
How did he see it? Can you just tell about the solos that you were playing or the choices you were making?
Well, just I was complaining to him. Oh.
I told him.
I was just like, dude, I can't play anything other than these licks, these same Van Halen and Michael Schenker licks. And he goes, man, he goes, I'll sit with you and we'll work on some theory.
That's interesting because your guys are a big band at this point in time.
Yeah.
Probably your peak almost.
Yeah. And the reason why I knew him was because I produced their first album.
That's right, First Watch.
Right.
Great record.
Yeah, and Tony was just amazing on that album. So he sat down with me, gave me a book of, you know, sheets of charts and stuff, and we just went over it. And I just went through all my modes and, you know, pentatonics and listened to all the different people. He was the one that introduced me to Joe Satriani. He told me to listen to Stevie Ray Vaughan. Told me to listen to, because at that point I wasn't listening to anybody.
Yeah, it's not metal.
I mean, you know, I just knew what I knew.
Yeah.
And got into, oh my gosh, Steve Vai. Did I mention Steve?
You said Satriani, so Steve.
Okay,
yeah.
Steve blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my opinion, Steve was like the, he was from some other universe with his playing.
Yeah.
And so I really connected with him. And I don't know if you hear, if you listen to Against the Law, you'll hear some little things of Steve in there because I was listening to him.
Not that kind of guy, maybe. There's a little bit of like the little sound effect things.
So you could imagine what it was like when Steve walked up to me at Disneyland Hotel one day when he was playing there during a NAMM show, pat me on the back and said, dude, great job on Against the Law.
You're like, ah.
I needed a diaper at that point. It was so cool. And so that... That's really where it was, you know, for me, was just to see that I could really work and bring myself to a new level of playing.
And that's interesting because, I mean, a lot of guys would not do that. If you ever saw the Rush documentary that they had where he went and took lessons from, I think his name is Freddie Roach, he's like a famous jazz drummer, and okay. Neil went and took lessons from him, you know, 25, 30 years into Rush, being Neil Peart, the greatest drummer ever,
yes.
Still wanted to learn more and get better. I mean, that says a lot.
Interesting enough, okay, so that was in 1989 when I was doing those lessons with Tony.
Yeah.
And I've ridden on that. And then, of course, Stryper was not together from 92 till 2003.
Right.
So I spent a long time not even playing guitar.
Wow.
Working at a warehouse. And then we got back together and started playing again. So I had to kind of brush up on everything and got myself back to where I was playing again, but still not really satisfied, and hardly ever am I satisfied with my own playing. So a year ago, I started taking jazz lessons from a cat here in town.
Hmm.
And just have now I'm realizing that everything I've ever learned was this much of the spectrum.
Yeah. The tip of the iceberg.
The tip of the iceberg. And now I'm learning so much. There's so much more that since I'm studying jazz, I'm flabbergasted, you know? But it's cool, too, because
sure.
I was raised that my dad listened to jazz,
right.
Like I said before. So I'm familiar with it. And being familiar with all this jazz, I can go to my teacher and say, well, do you remember this song from, you know, such and such? And he'll go, oh, yeah, you know that, huh? I'm like, yeah, because, I knew. And he'll pull out some sheets, and we'll sit there, and we'll start going through stuff. And like I said, I'm learning things that I've never, ever in my life played. You know, I'm so used to playing roots at the top of my guitar. Well, the roots now, I'm learning to go everywhere when I'm playing a chord. You know,
yeah.
My inversions are now, my roots are down at the first string, and I can play, you know. I'm doing different things. It's like learning Chinese, really, but... You know, I got a feeling that in the next I'm 54 years old right now.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully in the next 6 years, I can kind of retire from rock and then
yeah.
Do some guitar here in town.
Be the jazz man in the corner at the coffee shop. But, I mean, you mentioned this. I mean, talking about how big Stryper was in the 80s, you know, multi-platinum records and all this stuff. And then when you guys finally broke up and you had to go work in a warehouse, must have been a little bit of a culture shock for you.
Well, not really. I mean, I worked warehouse before I was in Stryper,
mm-hmm.
So I understood it, and I knew what it was all about. It wasn't hard to figure out and wasn't hard to organize, and I'm real good with, like, you know, I'm very anal about, you know, counting and all that kind of stuff, and making sure everything's in the right places, making sure orders are filled out properly, all that kind of stuff was really natural for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up working for JBL Professional Warehouse in Rancho Cucamonga, California. Started in 1994, I believe, and I worked there all the way through till Striper got back together.
Mm.
Was it one of those things
where people were like, are you guys Fox?
Oh, yeah. People recognized me every time. But it was funny. I got a good story for you. There was one receptionist gal that was working there, and I walked in with – it was cold. Obviously, it was wintertime, and it was cold. And I was wearing these – the only sweatshirt I had that was clean was a Striper sweatshirt. So I walk in, and this girl at the front desk looks at me. She goes, do you like Striper? And I'm like, yeah, they're okay. They're pretty cool. And she goes, She goes, I'm friends with Oz Fox. And I go, oh, is he cool? I never told her, dude.
It's embarrassing if you did, right?
Yeah, exactly. I just kind of just didn't say anything. I just, oh, that's cool, you know?
When you try not be you, right? Put your hair up in a ponytail. But was it, did you find, for example, Against the Law, which in my opinion is my favorite Striper record, but there was a little bit of a shift in the way you guys looked and got rid of the yellow and black and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Was that something, was there a spiritual issue there where you weren't as connected as you could have been or should have been?
I think there were a number of things that happened at that point. You know, I'm sure you've probably heard some of the stories. We did go through a time when we kind of lost track of our belief.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing stuff we shouldn't have been doing, and thank God we pulled out of that, you know. But
was it just a burnout, maybe, or just a rebellion?
I don't know. I want to say that part of that is the half-hearted Christianity, where you kind of have one foot in, one foot out.
Yeah.
And if you're not completely dedicated to God and surrendering completely, you can definitely go in that direction, because you become selfish and self-centered, and you start getting frustrated with the way things aren't going the way you want them to. Instead of saying, well, Lord, it's in your hands, you go, oh, I'm going to do this. You know, so we kind of strayed away from, you know, what we were believing in, and we started becoming more rebels. And, well, who cares what anybody says? You know, let's have a drink, and let's, you know, let's... you know, we changed the outfits mostly because the label wanted us to do something different. They wanted us to kind of break away from the yellow and black and do something more, you know, rootsy and rock. Mm-hmm. And we did. I think we pulled it off very well.
The look wasn't the issue. Yeah, it looked
great. And it obviously showed so much more talent of us being able to pull off all of that stuff and be more in that kind of a category of music. I mean, Michael just sang his butt off.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you played your butt off too.
Well, yeah, you know. I did my best and was really happy. But, you know, I mean, yes, there were some things going on with us in our hearts that weren't good.
Mm-hmm.
And I admit that, and very happy that we put our foot down and said, no more. We're going to, you know, and that started with Michael. Michael was the one who kind of got sick of the whole thing and said, you know what, we can't do this anymore.
Hmm.
You know, and then we all kind of figured it out and started
suit,
going back, yeah. But then shortly after that, he left the band.
Right. Now, let me ask, there's a couple things in Striper history I wanted to ask you about. One was Dale Thompson from Bride sang with you one gig or
one
show? Because you were going to go on. Michael left, and you're like, we're going to continue.
Well, we wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, and Dale was obviously a great friend, and, you know, we thought, well, let's see if he'd be interested in doing it. And he came, and he...
Killer voice.
He jammed with us, and yeah, he's a great, great singer. And it didn't work out. He decided he didn't want to do it after
all.
Okay. You know, and of course, you know, I think they were trying to mold him into something. At that time, I think Janice was part of the, the mom was still kind of involved with the band. And
gotcha.
That's Janice Sweet.
Yeah.
And I think she was talking to him about putting on these pants. That would,
yeah.
And Dale wasn't about
that. Dale in black or something, yeah.
He wasn't about all that. And I think he just finally just said, you know, this isn't for me. And, you know, it's good for him. I mean, you know, he made a good choice, and we ended up not continuing after that.
But then you guys went on as a trio, though, right? On vocals.
Only because we had some dates.
Gotcha.
You know, it wasn't that we were trying to replace Michael in any way in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I by no means could sing like Michael at all.
But you're a hell of a singer, though. You're a great singer.
Well, yeah, thank you. And you know, I don't like being a front man.
I was going to say.
I tried it, you know, and I did a band in the 90s called Sin Dizzy, and which there still is a CD out there that you can purchase for that. Yeah. But it just eventually just got to a point where I was like, man, I don't really, it's not my love to sing. Although I can sing okay, I can sing good, but I just it's just not my thing. I'm much more into playing guitar. And so, you know, that kind of was, I had to finally make a decision and say, you know, this is what I'm going to focus on.
Must have been kind of weird, too, though, because Stripe has so many harmonies and double leads and a lot of harmonies in the vocals, too. To lose a member and go in three, you've got to handle everything.
Yeah, that can be a problem. There was one time when we actually took Tony Palacios.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, we had toured in Europe one time to do some dates, and Tony at Guardian was on the same bill. So Tony jumped in and did some of the second guitar work. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah. You
know? But, you know, just, I don't know. Striper to me wouldn't be the same without original members. Not anymore. Not after this long, you know. And now that it's 30 years plus and, you know, I couldn't fathom seeing the band with anybody else, you know.
Yeah.
And unless something happened to one of the band members, and then we'd really have to decide whether we want to move on, you know.
All right, it's the 30th anniversary of Striper's classic To Hell with the Devil album, and guitarist Oz Fox has been sharing some great stories with us. All right, Oz, let me ask you, when you guys are touring around, what are some of the countries that are biggest for Striper?
Well, it's just from my perspective, it seems like every country is pretty pretty well, they receive us really well.
Yeah.
But I know we've done really, really well. We did really well in Australia. We've done really well in Korea. Number of countries in Europe.
Were, just so wherever you go.
Yeah, yeah. And we went to India. We played two shows in India a few years back. And that this is recent.
Right.
And there were thousands of people there. And I don't know if it was just they wanted to see a great rock show or what, but they were singing our songs.
How is that when you go and have Indian people or Koreans singing songs about God?
I mean, what are you going to say?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a great feeling to see that people are accepting what you're about and that they're singing the songs in English. And the fact that they even know them, you know. Spain. Spain's another great place for us to play. They love us there. And they know all the words of the songs. You know, that was more recent. We started going there when we reunited in 2005 and started playing Spain. And, man, they're just amazing crowds there. Unbelievable. Brazil.
Yeah, South America, right?
Yeah. South America. All, man, they love us down there. And so it's a great feeling to know that we can still do this and have the fans come see us and still believe in us and be a part of what we do. You know?
Do you have people, like if you go to Korea, for example, come up to you and say that, you know, you've influenced them to get into God, or does that even exist over in a country like Korea?
Yes, it does.
Wow.
It does happen. I get emails and Facebook comments and all that kind of stuff nowadays, now that you got all that.
Yeah.
We are touching people's hearts out in different countries like that. And, and the dynamic is there. It really is a really cool dynamic between me and Annie, because what Annie does, my wife, you know, she reaches her
she ministry, has a
ministry reaches
too.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so many people that are caught up in the sex trafficking thing that, you know, now I'm behind what she does, and I see the emails she gets from different places. It's pretty amazing.
What a team you are. I'm sure, like, you know, the old school ministers and Christians probably go, what the heck? You got a rock and roll guy, and you got Annie being a former sex worker, right? And you guys are now ministry.
Yeah.
You know, and I can just see, like, that's probably the coolest mix ever.
Does it not seem like it fits very well?
It sure does, right?
Yeah, it was great. You know, the first time I actually came out here before we started dating. I came out here to Vegas to do a gig at the old Hilton, which is now the Westgate.
Right.
It was kind of a birthday party for this kind of a, I want to say he's like a bachelor guy. That
like a contestant on The Bachelor?
No.
Oh.
He was a kind of like a playboy kind of dude.
Okay, gotcha.
And his mom was very rich, and she rented out one of the big halls and turned it into a haunted house kind of Halloween kind of thing. And everybody had to get dressed up in a costume to come to this thing, including the guys in the bands. Well, fortunately, this is with Frank, when I was doing this thing with Frank. They told the bands that each band member had to dress up like an 80s rocker. And I'm like, oh, that's easy.
So, I can do that.
So obviously I pulled out the old stuff. And at that time, Annie and I were friends. And I invited her. You know, I invited her to come. So I says to Annie, I says, yeah. I says, you're going to have to dress up in a costume if you come. And she's like, you know, I don't know. I don't want to do that. And I'm all, well, you can't come. You got to have an outfit. Don't you have anything? She goes, all I have is my bad girl outfit. I said, yeah, wear that. So she shows up, right? She's got a bustier and a mini skirt and fishnets, and she's got these crystal heels on, you know? She comes walking in, and she was just gorgeous. My gosh. I looked at her. I was like, oh, my jaw dropped, you know? And she comes up. She's smiling. She gives me a hug. And, you know, we ended up hanging out till like 7 in the morning after that. And is sharing and just talking about, you know, our Christianity. And it wasn't, I mean, didn't take more than a few minutes for me to realize she was the one.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you're wearing your Bumblebee outfit.
I was more against the law kind of.
Okay, yeah, the black and blue. Do you still have all those old costumes?
I still have all that stuff.
That's great. All like, you know, in a closet full.
In a box.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did it I'm not going to say hurt your feelings, but did it bother you like in the 80s when you guys would play gigs and you would have Christians picketing against you? Because you were playing music for God?
No, it didn't bother me.
Yeah.
Of course, the Bible talks about getting persecuted, you know, by like Jesus was persecuted by the Pharisees, so why wouldn't that happen to us by, you know, the real militant Christians, you know?
Right.
Conservative, you know, types. And so it happened, and it was like, well, count it all joy, right? You know, and I think there were times when I think Robert would go out there and try to talk to him, and they wouldn't listen. You know, just the way it was, you know. And for us, every now and then, you know, we would win some people over, you know. And later on, I started getting emails from people that said, you know, I used to be one of those people that bashed you guys, you know, but I don't anymore. I could see you guys are for real, you know. So that was nice to later see that happen. And of course, that same trend happened to Annie, you know, when she started her Hookers for Jesus.
Right.
So that was one of the things that I thought was a big plus to meet her in the first place, was that I could really relate to her with that kind of thing.
Because
she did get a lot of...
Sure.
And still to this day.
You guys are coming from different ends, but getting the same hassle.
Yeah, yeah.
For doing the same thing that the other Christians, quote unquote, are doing.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
So it's a great thing, and I love standing up for her. You know? It's my thing. You know? I was born to stand up for Annie.
You know, when you're talking about the ministry and you mentioned the Bible, I was thinking the other day they were talking about how basically paper money is going to be going the way of the dodo. Yeah. It's interesting. Even if you don't believe in God or believe in the Bible, you have to at least admit that everything that it says in the Bible of things that would happen to the world are happening now, which you'd have to be really stupid to not go, okay, well, there's something to this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Blind.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that would probably just call it a coincidence or, you know, just not really make light of any of it, you know?
Yeah.
Just because so many people don't understand the love of God, and they don't understand how much he loves them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's a very sad place to be.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're the best of persons, you're still not the person you should be without God loving you and you loving God. And so I all I can say is I would hope that I can at least be an example to some of those people in some way or some form.
Right.
You know, and
because you see that with, like, you're talking about one world government or talking about, like I said, like the newest thing now is like we still have credit cards and all this sort of stuff, but that's going to be abolished. The chip will go in your finger.
Yeah, there's already people putting chips in there.
And isn't that, you know, like you have to have this mark to buy and sell.
Yeah. It's totally getting set up for that.
And in the modern world, the mark could be a chip in your finger.
Yeah, and how about all of the stuff that's going on in the Middle East right now when Israel's being surrounded by his enemy, by its enemies?
Right.
And now they found oil in some of their part of what Israel is claiming is theirs, but it actually, there's a battle over the border.
Yeah.
You know, and so as soon as, you know, there's going to be some kind of war going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think it's all just kind of putting into play for what prophesied in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, what are you going to do?
Well, I mean, you know? What you do is just make sure you're on the right team.
Yes, exactly. Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
and another thing I wanted to talk to you about too is you were mentioning about doing the lessons with Tony Palacios and how Dale came and sang with you. It seemed like it was a very, I mean, obviously Christian metal bands, there weren't a lot of them, but you guys kind of all knew each other or got along.
Yeah.
And now you're actually in Bloodgood, which is another great Christian band of the era. Are you in Bloodgood or you just stay with them?
I am in Bloodgood, unless I'm busy with Striper.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. So we did do an album a few years ago.
Yeah.
And ended up being a really, really great album.
It is.
But obviously they're selling it out of their website, so they don't really sell a lot of units.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's still there. The guys are still around. They still want to kind of play and do their thing. So, you know, when they have gigs, I do my best to make it to the gigs, as long as I obviously don't have a schedule with Striper.
How did that come about?
Well, probably around 2006. This was after I had already went through my divorce from my first marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And Striper was back together, but not really touring much, not doing much, you know, as far as being busy and all that. They approached me because I'd already been friends with Les Carlson, the singer, because he lived in Fontana and I lived in Rancho Cucamonga at the time. And we just happened to bump into each other at that warehouse that I worked in for JBL. He owned a business that sold framed art door to door.
Wow. Okay.
So he walks into my warehouse office one day and I just happened to walk into the office and, you know, I was like, dude, what are you doing here? You know? And then he kind of explained to me that he moved from Seattle and now he's doing this business, you know, and he did very well with it, you know, and so that was, my gosh, that had to be back in like 1996, maybe, that I'd run into him. So we started hanging out a little bit, and so then, lo and behold, years later, I got asked to be a part of kind of like a Christian retreat in England, of all places, Michael Bloodgood was being asked to be there.
What a great name.
Event. Yeah,
like,
I know.
Awesome name, right? Yeah. Bloodgood.
Yeah. So we ended up hanging out a lot in England for that week and just became really good friends. And so when it came time for, they started getting some, somebody was interested in doing a re-release of one of their albums and maybe see if they could do a release of one of their live videos.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're talking about doing that. And then they thought, well, let's add a second guitar player to the band. And they started talking about it, and they thought, well, you know, we both know Oz. And, you know, they really liked me a lot. And they thought, well, if there was going to ever be anyone in the band other than Paul Jackson, who is an outrageously awesome player, they would want me. You know, so they asked me, and I basically said, you know, I talked to Michael about it.
I was going to say, do you call him up and say, I got this?
No, yeah, offer. And I always run stuff like that by Michael, you know, because, I mean, I don't want to, you know, do anything to be detrimental to Striper's schedule or any of that. And Michael was like, yeah, if we got, we're not doing anything, why don't you go do it? So that's kind of...
That's cool.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
And that's how bands stay together, too, by the way.
Right.
You compromise. Talk it over.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember that, guys.
That's how you have the same original lineup 30 years later. I remember I went and saw Bloodgood in Winnipeg, where I grew up, at a roller rink.
Oh, wow.
Probably 1986 or so. And It was like you had to sit on the floor, like there was no chairs. Mm. I just remember that. I was one of the first bands I'd ever seen. And to see them up close when you had albums that you could actually listen to and hold in your hand.
Yeah.
And then they're playing right in front of you. It was one of those, as a kid, I'll never forget seeing Bloodgood.
Yeah.
Very random. You know what I mean? I actually saw Striper too in 88. I drove from Winnipeg to Fargo, North Dakota.
Oh, wow.
To see you guys play and White Lion opened up.
Yeah.
And so after the show was done, you guys were having a meet and greet. And I just kind of attached myself to the meet and greet. Like Fast Times at Ridgemont Highway just goes, oh, I'm going to go on this field trip and just get in the back of the line. And I got, I wanted to get a picture with everybody, and I had one picture left on my camera, and it was with you. I still have it.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, and then I took one more. I wanted to get one with Robert. It didn't work.
Oh.
You know, in those days, though, yeah. I still have the shot of you and me.
Sure, that's awesome.
Super long hair and a sweater on, but, you know, you mentioned, you don't forget that stuff.
That was a real important time for us to meet with our fans.
After
shows. And, you know, it was great to be able to create kind of that bond,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, and to this day nobody forgets, like yourself,
right?
So those are the people that still come to see us play, and you know, it's important. You know, nowadays the unfortunate thing is there's not enough money at least for some of us, I should say. Not everybody's like us, but there's not enough money for us there's not enough money coming in with guarantees to help us with our tour.
Right.
So there's been a lot of these meet and greet packages that they started doing these days. And some people are really just milking people.
Yes.
Some people are charging so much money and they're hardly even there, you know, for it.
That's true.
So we charge a little bit of money because it is work.
Mm-hmm.
It is work to sit there and sign all those autographs that they want.
Well,
and
yeah.
Take pictures with everybody. It takes a toll out of you, especially if you have to do a show later on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that does now help us, you know, financially to keep our tours going.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully everybody will understand that. And, you know, and just for the amount that we charge, it's not as much as
I think people
else.
Do, because I know we started that with Fozzy a few years ago, because, you know, people understand, like, if, let's say you have a day off on the road.
Yeah.
You still got to pay the bus. You still got to pay the crew. You still got to pay the driver, over driver, hotels, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And even just to put gas in the tank is so expensive.
Exactly.
And without tour support and now without revenue coming in from the albums, at least meet and greets and VIPs will help you supplement the income a bit.
It really does help.
You know?
So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, that's helping to keep these tours alive, and I really appreciate that people do that.
Yeah.
That they'll do that.
I thought it was interesting on that tour we were talking about, you guys did it after the show. You guys would always meet with fans after the show?
Yeah. Back in the day, we would.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the things that I wanted to do most. Oh, I think Annie's calling me. One of the things I wanted to do was to meet with people after shows, because I used to be the kid that would wait outside the door of a venue waiting to see if I'm going to get a chance to meet the artist.
Yeah.
And a limo would pull up and they'd get in the car and take off.
Yeah.
So that was always kind of like, oh, that sucks. You know, that's terrible. You know, so in the early days of Striper, I would always walk out and just try to meet with people.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Yeah.
It was great to make that connection with people.
It's a real chance to get to know the kids that are there.
So, and still to this day, people will catch us individually sometimes when we're walking out to whatever, to the bus or, you know, to our cars or whatever, and we'll sign a few autographs, you know, right there. We won't just walk away, you know, so. But the meet and greet package, you get all four of us.
Right. And picture and shirt. And
we got a backdrop. We stand there and everybody gets in the middle and we take pictures of everybody. So that's definitely a plus.
If you give people their money's worth on stuff like that, they'll always be happy.
Oh, yeah. You get a package with stuff in it.
Little merch, little swag bag.
I love the little It's a stress reliever squeeze creature, I call it. It's the shape of a devil, and it says, to hell with the devil. So when you're frustrated.
See, now I want to get one of those.
Yeah.
I still got my Bible that you guys gave me from 88. Now I want the squeeze creature. Couple last questions for you, man.
Yeah.
You mentioned before that you were a big Sabbath fan. Is that where you got Oz from? Where did the name Oz come from? Do you even remember?
Yeah, the name Oz came from me imitating Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, really?
Back when I was playing backyard parties in my hometown of Whittier, California, and people started calling me Oz.
Like vocally, you sound like Ozzy singing.
Impersonate his voice.
Gotcha.
I try to make my, you know, what is this that stands before me? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and so I ended up, having a lot of people call me Oz. They called me that in high school. Teachers would call me Oz. And eventually when I got into Striper, that's how Robert and Michael knew me, as Oz.
Ah.
So we kept the name Oz, and then came up with Fox later.
It's a great rock and roll name.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah.
For a little Hispanic kid from Whittier, it works okay. And the other thing I wanted to mention was I have a website.
Okay.
It's a guitar lesson website where you can learn. You subscribe to it, and you can learn about how I play, all the different modes that I learned from Tony.
Wow.
You know, and I'm adding to that library.
Do you teach lessons too on this, or just like videos?
It's all videos that you could subscribe to, kind of like Netflix.
Gotcha.
About the same price.
Yeah.
If you buy the year thing, then it's a little eight and some change, roughly. And then if you want to pay month to month, it's $10.99. But you can go in and see some stuff. And there's interviews from guys. I got an interview from Tony
On
there. Handful of different Howie Simon, who played with Alcatraz recently in the last years. So there's some great stuff there. Michael's got an interview there.
Oh, cool.
Highlighting his playing and all
is
that.
Is it OzFox.com?
No, it's called Sir Oz Academy.
Sir Oz Academy.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, you know, I've got that going right now, and I'm still kind of adding to it as we go. And, you know.
When you guys, you mentioned, Michael, I mean, like I said earlier, your double leads and harmony leads are tremendous from Reach Out all the way to this day. Do you guys sit down together and just bang it out, or does Michael have an idea, or do you have an idea, or how do you get that stuff going?
Yeah, in the very beginning, there definitely was, Michael had all these ideas, and I would sit down and harmonize with whatever he was doing. You know, there have been some times when he and I would have hashed out some ideas. You know, he would come up with something and I'd say, okay, well, let's try this after that. And we would work it out. So there were a handful of those as well.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, we work so well together. And
it's
we
a great
can,
tandem.
We can pretty much play each other's stuff. No problem. Style, so to speak. Of course, if you hear Michael by himself, he's totally different style by himself than I am. I'm a different player, you know. So you can tell the difference, you know, but when we come together to play together, we nail each other's vibe really well.
Such great chemistry there.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. And, you know, I think hopefully we'll continue to do that. I think the last album, we've had some great stuff.
Absolutely.
You know, that was put together. And I had to, on the Pride, the song Pride, when we had to do harmony on that, it's a whole harmony. And basically, we didn't have time to get together, so I just said, Mike, you make up the solo, and I'll just make the harmony for it. So I had to sit there and really just, oh, man, he did me in. He really got you. He's a great player.
He sure is.
And not too many people realize it,
you
know, but he is a great player.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm really looking forward to hearing what his new stuff sounds like, because he just did a solo.
I know, he's another solo. Yeah. He's very prolific these days.
Yeah.
When you get into a room to bang out some of these songs in rehearsal, do you have to relearn them? Like when you record a record and don't play the song for 6 months, kind of forget how it goes?
Yeah, you know, fortunately this time I've kind of spent some time working on all the songs, so. So he just recently gave me the song list, and the songs that he picked are probably going to be easy for me to do because I've already kind of been working on them since we stopped recording. But then there's a whole bunch of older ones that he wants to do, and I'm going, oh, boy. Okay. Cause we gotta do, I mean, you got to sit there and figure out how you're did.
Stop, start, pause.
There's a guy. He comes on. His name is Mike Gross. It's called rockandguitarlessons.com. He figures out songs by other bands and shows you how to play them. And sometimes I have to go watch him play something. And, oh, yeah, that's how it goes.
learn your own songs.
Yeah.
Last question. What's your favorite solo that you've ever played, if you had to pick one? And what's your favorite song to play live?
Oh, jeez.
Could you pick one?
All the Striper songs. I mean, if I can pick the funnest one to play live, it has to be Soldiers, mm-hmm. Under Command. That's definitely a fun one to play because it's got all the elements of Striper.
It's Striper, yeah.
Yeah.
You could, one Striper song in a time capsule, yes. That would be it.
That's the one that is probably the quintessential Striper anthem. And I know everybody might say it's To Hell with the Devil. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that is definitely an anthem song. But to me, Soldiers was the start.
Yeah, it's a little bit more intricate for sure.
Right.
And favorite solo?
Favorite solo, geez. I guess I'm kind of partial to The Way.
Ah, you wrote it, your song.
Well, if it was a choice of guitar solos, that pretty much set a precedence of my playing, mm-hmm. That solo.
Yeah.
It starts off with the springboard, you know, and it does all these cool little riffs in different modes and whatever.
I can hear it in my head right now.
Yeah, right.
It's a very melodic solo.
Yeah, and that one definitely is probably the easiest and the funnest to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of my wackiest ones was from the Against the Law album. Definitely not that kind of guy.
Yeah, I'm thinking that one too.
Yeah,
that's my
favorite. That's the wackiest one.
Yeah, that's very Vi-esque, right? Oz, it's been great talking to you, man.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you,
brother.
I
really appreciate the time, and thanks for coming out. And it's great to hang. Man, we should hang out more.
I know. I agree. I agree.
You gotta come out more often.
I know. We can have a jam.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, thanks to Oz Fox. Great conversation. Remember, Striper's To Hell with the Devil 30th Anniversary Tour has a few dates left. Tomorrow night at the Agora Theater in Cleveland, Sunday in Columbus, the 16th, Detroit, November 17th, Reading, Pennsylvania, November 19th, the Stone Pony in Asbury Park, New Jersey. I will be there. I think that's where Bruce Springsteen cut his teeth. November 20th, the Gramercy Theater in New York, and November 21st, the last date of the tour is in Raleigh, North Carolina. You don't want to miss it. It's a great show, a great set. They're playing the album in its entirety, than playing some other classic Striper hits. And then they will be on the Monsters of Rock cruise from February 2nd to the 7th. Ship leaves from Tampa, Florida. There's still tickets left. Go to Striper.com. And hey, if you don't have Striper To Hell with the Devil album, you can get it on Amazon. Great album, classic. And if you really want to treat yourself, get the new Avenged Sevenfold album, The Stage, while you're there. And go listen to Shadows and Gates and Johnny Christ on the Avenged Sevenfold week from a few shows ago. And remember, when you do buy The Stage or To Hell with the Devil, please use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links to make your purchase. You can find my Amazon links at podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got my Amazon links for USA, UK, Canada, A. Every time you use the Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage of the show to help us cover production costs. You can buy just about anything you can think of on Amazon. Use them Amazon links, won't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You're going to find all my sponsors there as well. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. 15% off the yoga program plus 3 months full access to the DDP Yoga Now app. DraftKings, use my promo code Y2J to play for free with no deposit this weekend for Fantasy MMA. And then there's Bowl & Branch. Go to bowlandbranch.com, use the promo code Jericho. Get $50 off your first set of sheets. All right. Big thanks for checking out the Jericho Network at Podcast One as well. Got another hit in our hands, Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. This week's episode is my favorite yet. It's a huge debate between Calgary and Winnipeg. Where is which one is the better wrestling city? Okay, you got to go check it out and make your choice. Who has the better wrestling talent? Who actually grew up in Calgary versus who grew up in Winnipeg? Plus, you got to hear the crazy story about Culkamania that Cyrus tells. You got to go check it out. And don't forget, Keeping It 100 with Conan. That launched with a bang, keeps growing. Conan, Disco Inferno, KG, funny, opinionated, not afraid to talk about anything. And then, of course, talking about just the most random pop culture ideas and episodes that you're going to hear from. Team Tiger Awesome, the hilarious Team Tiger Awesome. Mundy, Truly Engaged, discuss this week how they would individually handle the apocalypse as far as pleasuring themselves. Yeah, you heard it. Go hit the subscribe button on all the Jericho Network shows. Be sure to leave a 5-star rating review on iTunes. We appreciate it. And we got a big podcast, 122 days until Mick Foley joins us for the biggest podcast ever. And speaking of big podcasts, I got another huge Talk is Jericho live podcast coming up November 20th at the Bassett Theater in Toronto. There's been a little bit of a change. Original guest AJ Styles, due to circumstances beyond our control, could not do the show.
but I got a great replacement for you. I think you're going to like it, maybe even better. My best friend Kevin Owens is going to be there. That's right. Kevin Owens, November 20th at the Bassett Theater in Toronto, joins me for a live talk as Jericho. Get your tickets at markoutmoments.com. Still a handful of VIP meet and greets and a couple tickets for the brunch that KO and I are going to have an hour before the show. Come have some breakfast with me and my best friend. Go to markoutmoments.com for tickets November 20th in Toronto before Survivor Series. Talk is Jericho live with Kevin Owens. All right. Thank you for listening to Oz Fox today. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And coming up next Wednesday, Talk is Jericho, episode 300. Only one guest worthy of such a milestone episode. Any guesses? Let me give you a hint. He's the architect of the biggest heavy metal band of all time. All right? You have to guess who it's going to be. You're going to hit me up on Twitter at Talk is Jericho with your best guess at who it's going to be. Remember, take your best guess at who it's going to be. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. Get ready for episode 300. Episode 100, the special guest with Paul Stanley. Episode 200, special guest with Dennis Miller. This guy is just as big, if not bigger, than both of those. We will see you on episode 300 next Wednesday right here on Talk is Jericho. Thank you so much. Have a good weekend and a yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.